What's so great about? What's so great about? Who? What's so great about? What's so great about?
Welcome to What's So Great About, a podcast that asks great questions and gets great answers. My name is Terry.
My name is Andy.
Andy, how the bloody hell are you?
Very well, Terry. Very well. And you?
I too am well.
Good to hear it, pal.
Hey, Andy.
Yeah, Terry.
We got another guest this week.
Who is it?
We have an actor, a stand-up comedian, a podcaster, and the guy who speaks into an orange traffic cone in the National Lottery ad. It's Ed Salmon.
Hey, just don't ask me for the numbers. People have been asking me for the numbers. It's getting tiresome.
Really?
I know. A few people have asked me for the numbers, but it's heartening to know that people still watch television.
I actually saw it when I was in the cinema.
So did
so
I.
You're on the big screen. About
I
that?
Was, yeah, on the big screen, but I went to see Top Gun Maverick.
And what a movie. What a picture.
So, and I turned to my partner and was like, here I am, side by side, sharing the screen with Tommy Cruise.
Yeah.
And I'm like, should I stand up? Should I stand up and like turn around and give a sort of a wave and nod, like, you know, like they do in...
It's like, all right, guys, I'm just trying to enjoy my night everybody. Here too, just like you.
Enjoy yourself, everybody.
I'm just a regular superstar.
I'm one of you tonight.
Yeah, were you doing the Leo DiCaprio point to the screen from, you know...
from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, yeah.
Yeah. Who else was in that ad? There was somebody else that caught my eye that I was like, oh, I know that other person as well.
Putting there on the was... spot now. There was a guy.
Who does Terry know?
There was a guy, Singleton, is his surname. I can't think. I know his brother Graham Singleton is an improviser comedian,
Jesus.
Has been in sketches and stuff. But the minute your man came in, he just had the same energy about him, and I just went, "Do you have a brother called Graham Singleton?" He's like, "Yeah, that's my brother." I was like, "Absolutely." He's the guy with the. Is it Aaron Singleton? I can't. No, Aaron was the other guy.
It was portraying big Singleton energy, though.
Big Sing big energy.
BSE. Look, speaking of, this
his
is a question.
Cock is massive as well.
Well.
Well, look, we were getting changed. I thought it'd be rude not to look.
He was getting changed.
He was getting changed.
Was just there.
I was moving the controls on the camera, sitting in my sliver S groove with Billy Baldwin.
That's a delightful romp. Now, let me ask you, because we're talking about the cinema, and this is a question I want to ask everybody who's coming on the show this season. We're halfway through 2022. What's the best movie you've seen in the cinema this year?
Oh, well, I haven't seen many.
Damn it, same answer as last week.
But for sure, Top Gun Maverick.
Fucking class, isn't it? Like,
yeah, just it's so strange how... good it was. Well, not strange.
It shouldn't have worked. I didn't think it was going to work at all.
I mean, I realized afterwards it was people were pointing out the sort of similarities between other movies and, you know, the whole mission is flying down a trench and shooting into this tiny little hole to blow up the
Death
Star.
That's never been done before.
And I was like, oh, yeah, of course. But I thought, like, I think I realized something as well with these legacy sequels, as they call them now, in that a lot of the time they're very, very disappointing. But I think with Top Gun, you just have to make a sequel to a movie that's iconic, but actually not very good.
Exactly.
Because the original Top Gun, there's no stakes to it at all. The only stakes is this douchebag lead character going to get his dick wet or not? And I don't really care.
And they're going to give him, like, the best boy badge. Is he going to be Top Gun? Yeah. Like, is he going to be number one Top Gun?
Am I the best?
Like, I am the best. I tell you right now, I'm the best. We watched, myself and my wife, we watched the original in anticipation for going to see the new one.
Yeah, me too.
And I was like, Well, it's weird that, like, the part of the most affecting piece of it for me was Anthony Edwards.
Yeah,
a Goose. I was like, he's the standout performer.
Yeah,
like as a, you see Val Kilmer and Tom Cruise are the movie stars, but I was like, this guy has the most personality out of a lot of them, and that's why when he dies, spoiler for 1986's Top Gun.
I was just about to watch it.
When he dies, it's so affecting, and then you know the fact that they mine that for gold in the sequel with the whole, you know, his son. Hates Maverick because, you know, their relationship is fraught after what happened with his dad and some other stuff. But, like, the reason that works so well is because it's playing off the earnestness that, like, he has kind of brought in the first one. I found, anyway. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Like, and like I said it last week, the visceralness of, like, them being in those fucking jets.
Yeah.
And, like, Tom Cruise getting fucking bounced around while he's going down through a chasm. Fucking great.
Yeah, it was just the best use of, even the way they used Val Kilmer in it was so,
that was so good.
So
yeah.
Well done. And because I was thinking, like, I knew he was in it, and I was thinking, because, you know, his health issues at the moment, he can't really talk.
Yeah, he's throat, like, cancer.
How are they going to do this? But they just gave it a kind of a reality. Like, you know, it was one of those movies where it's simultaneously pure magic realism, fantastical action movie schlock, that if you think about it for a second, it all falls apart.
Yeah, it's a house of cards. It is like
a wet taxi with a cardboard. but it also has this kind of realism to it in scenes that actually emotionally connect. Like, we saw it in, like, Screen 4 in... I would have loved to have seen it in IMAX, but it was kind of...
Me too, I didn't get to see it.
It was kind of too late for that.
Can I ask, as a non-cinema goer, what the difference is between IMAX and
just
normal?
Just the giant, the biggest screen.
It's just a massive screen.
And
sound
and everything.
Sound-wise.
It's like just immersive experience.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I went to see Interstellar in IMAX with my parents, and my dad had his hands over his ears pretty much the whole time.
That movie is loud.
Loud for a movie set in space, ironically.
Not in IMAX. It's fucking really loud, so I can only imagine. Yeah.
But
see Lego Movie 2 in IMAX.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, wow. Even for, like, a fucking kids movie, it's like that that Simpsons THX where the teeth explode. Turn it up.
Yeah, it's a bit much. But I know, I mean, well, IMAX would have been great for this. But, like, Screen 4 in Rathmines Cinema, a month and a half after it opened, and it was reasonably full, not sold out, but people also applauded at the end of it. There was, like, a round of applause.
Ooh. People missed the movie.
Just spontaneously, like, oh, yeah, this is it.
That's nice.
So, I don't know. Like, and like, it's a billion-dollar movie at this stage.
It's his biggest movie ever.
It's crazy.
It's outgrossed Titanic domestically, which, like, if you told me that, because it had been delayed for fucking 2 years, and he was like, no, he was adamant, no, it has to be, fuck COVID, we're doing it on the big screen, and it has totally paid off from, like...
I'm glad.
And I'd say the two Mission Impossible ones that he's pushed back till next year and 2024, the same thing's going to happen with them, because it's fucking him jumping off a cliff on a motorcycle. Like, you're going to pay.
Good for him. He seems like a nice man. He's like a lovely man.
that's my Irish mammy
no
review.
No skeletons in his closet.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, as long as you don't look into his personal life, he's lovely.
Sure.
His bizarre personal.
Honestly, I couldn't care less of
me neither. Like,
no, me neither.
You know,
I want to see what's on screen and nothing else.
So, shall we get into the movie, lads? Enough of this preamble. Enough foreplay.
Six too young is here, baby. And I'm gonna take care of you.
Thursday started out with a bang. Heat, humidity, moonlight. All the elements in place for a long weekend. I was good at my job. There were periods when my hands moved with a speed and skill beyond me.
have you been doing this?
5 years.
Wow, you must have seen some things, huh?
But in the last year, I'd started to lose that control.
I've been seeing the ghosts.
You ever notice people who see things are always crazy?
Mm-hmm.
I just needed a few slow nights, followed by a couple of days off.
There's a double shooting, 41st and 8th.
What happened to chest pain, difficulty breathing, fractured hands?
Don't even slow down, just keep on moving.
Nobody loves me, Chris.
You have the power, Jesus, to spare this worthless man.
Rise up!
I'll be banging!
Damn, you guys are good.
I'm on my way out. Anytime now.
Nobody gets fired, son. Look at me.
You swore that you'd fire me if I came in late again. You swore. You swore.
I'll fire you tomorrow.
Old man's a bus driver, mom a nurse. Sort of born to it, I guess.
Rule number one, don't get involved with patients' daughters, you understand?
Our mission, to save lives.
Blast off!
Help others and you help yourself. That was my motto. I understood how crazy it was to think this way. Then something good will happen. Everything just glows.
Here's to the greatest job in the world.
Frank!
Are you okay?
Never felt better in my life. How are you?
I'm good. Good. You can't push on.
That was the trailer for Bringing Out the Dead, directed by Martin Scorsese, written by Paul Schrader. Lads, should we get into a bit of boff?
Some box office and fun facts?
You know it. If you remember this from last time, Ed,
yeah,
we do have a little game. So let's start off
cheated
with...
beforehand, but I haven't.
Well, what we're going to do is I'm going to give it to Andy first, and then you can work off. Oh, your cheat sheet. Okay. Hey, you
no,
got
no,
cards.
No. These are just my notes that I wrote down.
These are just your jokes.
Box office, domestic opening weekend.
Okay, budget, Andy. You had to take a stab.
The budget. It's a Scorsese joint, so it ain't going to be cheap. $60 million.
Okay, $60 million.
$60 million.
Ed, what do you think?
Ooh, it seems a little high for. How many ambulances did they destroy?
One, I think there was one ambulance
one,
destroyed
for sure.
We've got to shoot it from different angles again.
I would say
again and again.
Probably less than 60. I would say probably around 25 million.
32 million.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, 32 million.
Okay,
it's quite
gets that one
high enough for 1998.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about Snake Eyes last week, and that was like $72 million budget.
That's what made me think.
And like,
but it's very different, I guess.
That one is like a big production. There's fucking tens of thousands of extras. This one is smaller scale, but I think the techniques they're using, and like, they're again, it's all like on location. It's all you know, tactile. You know, like you say, they're in ambulances. They're in actual ambulances. So, you know, like, he's spending a bit of money. I'd say even filming in New York, like, permits alone fucking cost you a fortune. Like,
I'd say. Okay.
That's how I guess at the opening weekend. Opening, Andy.
Opening. $5 million.
Okay.
Just like that.
$5 million and $1. No, I'm not going to do that. I would say.
This is what I did to you last time.
I would go a little bit higher. I would say 8.
6.1 million.
Wow.
Not a strong opening.
One more for the bad guy, huh?
That's probably not a strong opening, because I imagine being a Scorsese. Is it Scorsese or Scorsese?
Scorsese.
Oh, I've been saying it wrong both ways the whole time.
We've all been saying
Scorsese
it wrong.
Scorsese is a very Irish way of saying it. Martin Scorsese.
Well, being a Martin Scorsese joint, it would probably have opened on an awful lot of screens, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I mean, it was disappointing. It opened fourth at the box office. Oh. So like, and the word of mouth was not great.
Yeah.
So I'd never heard of this. That's what I mean. Like, you know, you've heard of Scorsese movies of the 90s, like Goodfellas, Casino, Cape Fear. Like,
yeah,
this one is
Gambler? Under the radar.
Yeah,
largely forgotten.
Yeah, and I hadn't seen it in a long time. I think I rented the tape from Extravision way back when. Wow. Yeah, I know. Showing my age. Dropping Extravision in there.
Although you're the youngest one here.
Yeah, exactly.
Make me blush, Andy.
I remember we'd all gather around Joe's house on a Saturday night and he'd put on the old movie Trolla and load up the old 8mm version.
Yeah, exactly. And sit there projector.
And watch a snuff movie.
It is a Nick Cage movie, 8mm.
Hey, there you go. I've seen that.
It's about a snuff movie. It's a grim movie, but it has plot devices ever in a film. In that, like, he bursts into a house, and there's like a record playing really loudly, and he's like, he's kind of like looking around or whatever.
Oh yeah,
clearing it, and then like the record stops dead. And then you just hear somebody change the record and put a new song on and it starts blasting. You're like, oh, fuck, there is somebody here.
Yeah.
Like, so unnerving. I was like, how do I rip that off for the modern age? Like, is it like Spotify? You hear like an ad for Spotify come on or something. Yeah. Like?
And then the ad stops. And then a new track. Like, someone skips
a new one.
Yeah.
5 seconds like, at a time.
The phone changes from, it just starts ringing. And he's like, yeah, no, I'll have to call you back. And then the song keeps playing.
Yeah.
There's something there.
The pieces are all there.
Yeah, no, sorry. I've got a guy here. I'll have to call you back.
The film is real.
Can I guess the domestic total?
Domestic and international are the same, just so you know.
Okay.
So,
what was the opening weekend? 6.1? Yeah. 10.
Okay. Do you stick or twist, Ed?
I would say I'll go for 13.4.
16.8.
Oh, God, I was going to go for 15, but I thought that was too much.
I was like, God damn it. Urging you on.
I thought it was too much. I was just thinking how depressing this movie is and how word of mouth would have been. This movie's kind of depressing.
Yeah.
You don't want word of mouth.
This is what you want to go see on the big screen. Get your popcorn ready.
Okay, got any fun facts for us there, Terry?
How about this? This is the only Martin Scorsese film of the 90s to get 0 Oscar nominations.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How about that?
Martin Scorsese did not enjoy filming this movie. It was filmed mostly at night in mid-December, so the conditions were particularly harsh.
Yeah.
And considering they're like... And
it's on screen.
And they...
It's supposed to be like a heat wave or sweltering hot.
Yeah. Yeah. And like they're in like short sleeve shirts for the most part of it. Like.
Yeah.
One third of the movie was actually filmed in ambulances at night. So one third of the movie takes place inside ambulances.
Okay.
Wow.
I mean, yeah.
Paul Schrader had previously worked with Scorsese on Taxi Driver, Raging Bull, and The Last Temptation of Christ. Marty asked him to work on this because he felt that Paul is the best person to write about New York in the middle of the night. Also, Paul Schrader is quite a depressing man.
Yeah.
Who is he?
He's like, he wrote Taxi Driver. Is his big thing. Like, you know.
I haven't seen Taxi Driver, so I could be talking out my arse. But is this how...
Big Taxi Driver vibes, like, big. Yeah. Okay, like, yeah. New York is the 10th dimension of hell. Like, you know, all the fucking scum. There's a line in Taxi Driver where he's like, I wish the rain would wash
everybody. Someday real rain's going to come wash all the filth from the streets.
So he knows.
Yeah, that's the line, yeah.
So yeah, there's that vibe in this one.
Yeah, well, it's kind of a mad hothouse.
Yeah, like
yeah,
the characters are different. The characters are certainly different. Like, Travis Bickle is a lot more, how would you say, socially inept than than Frank's character.
More socially inept.
That's the thing. Like,
I haven't seen it, but
He's depressed, but he doesn't know how to express himself as well as Nicolas Cage's character seems to.
And he has all this rage just stuck inside him.
God, I can't wait to see that movie.
It's
good.
Yeah,
surprisingly,
it's good. Funny as
it is actually. Like, there's a lot of dark.
Yeah. As much as I'm a big De Niro fan, like, I haven't seen a lot of his pre-90s movies that kind of made him.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if they made him. Well, he was a star in the 80s, I guess.
Hey, but, if you like Meet the Fockers, you're going to love
you'll love Taxi Driver.
That intensity he brings to that movie. Whoa. This is where it all came from.
Yeah. It just transplanted that. Some people actually say that the character in Meet the Fockers is Travis Bickle 20 years later.
Oh, really? Is that? Man, I love theories like that.
I hate that shit. I hate that shit. You know, it's like
the pieces are there. If you,
well, just look, you know, I mean,
in the background, you can see he's reading a book that he clearly read in Taxi Driver,
and it looks like it's been read over the time of 20 years. So he obviously kept it from his time in New York as a cabbie.
Why would they put it in?
Yeah.
His character orders a taxi and then turns to camera as if to say, "I used to be a taxi driver," but they cut it out of the movie.
Winks to camera. What's that?
And they cut the wink. And he's played by the same actor. I love that kind of intelligent conclusion that dumb people reach when they go like, "But oh yeah, but I mean, he's been played by the exact same guy, so it has to be the same guy,
and he looks and sounds the same." One last one. Nick Cage will go through an average of 10 shirts per night of filming. Due to a combination of blood, sweat, and mud getting all over them.
And he also was a big Hulk Hogan fan.
He kept ripping them.
He used to rip them off.
That's something I could see. Nick Cage doing Nick Cage things where he's like, "Bruh!" And Marty's like, "Nicky, please. I mean, we've only got 10 more of these shirts."
Hey, also, I don't know if you noticed, the dispatcher, for the most part, was Martin Scorsese.
Yeah,
I only seen it in the credits, and I wish I'd have paid more attention.
Like, he plays a character in Taxi Driver as well. He's a great scene. Yeah. He's a great scene of him in Taxi Driver.
Yeah, it's an amazing scene.
Yeah.
And he just kind of came in at the last minute. But no, because I've heard him being interviewed so many times, and the minute I heard his voice as the dispatcher, I was like, oh yeah, of course,
there he is.
He's in it quite
he's a
bit,
cheesy
actually.
Himself.
Yeah, I, because, you know, they switch out the dispatcher, you know, and it almost seems like, you know, when they're dialing up the mania, it's like Scorsese comes back in.
Like the
middle part is quite serene in comparison to the first two nights, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Ed, can I ask you, just because we gave you your pick of Nick Cage movies, and you decided to plump for this one.
With the exception of some that were previously taken.
Oh,
of course.
Sorry.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I plumped for it because what's your question?
No, that's why did you pick it? Yeah.
Because I'd never seen it, for one. Never seen it, and not that I'm a Scorsese completist, but I have seen pretty much
every other movie.
Done. I think the only ones I haven't seen now are Kundun and
great name.
What's that one? Silence.
Nobody's fucking seen Silence.
Nobody's seen that.
New York.
I haven't seen that either.
Yeah. Are you going to watch a 3-hour movie about Jesuit priests in Japan?
Silence.
Yeah, not really. Because
apparently it's brilliant, but like, I just don't have it in me.
See, that's it. Like,
wow,
it's
2016.
it's too much. It's just too much.
I'm just looking at the thing here.
Great cast. Yeah. You got Garfield.
Andrew Garfield's
you got
it.
Garfield, you got Driver, you got Neeson.
But they're all they're all like gaunt as fuck in it because they're, you know, starving Jesuit priests, so they don't even
screenplay, you know, by Jay Cox. C-O-C-K-S.
Jay Cox. Get me Cox. I want Cox to do a hard pass on this script.
Hey, we're not going anywhere until Jay Cox gets his hands on this thing, okay?
I want you to spray that Cox magic all over it.
I got all over the screen. I got Andrew Garfield here, and he's begging for Cox.
You love Cox. You can't get enough Cox.
Without Cox.
Driver, you love Cox, don't you? Hey, Liam. Big fan of Cox.
I'm a huge fan.
I'm a massive fan of Cox, yes.
I love a Cox. It's Cox. Screenplay. All
right. All right.
Okay,
all
well, right. We're having fun, huh? Before...
Yeah, so I had never seen it. I'd only seen the trailer for it. It's never even been on TV that much. This is one of these kind of...
It's one of those film four at one in the morning movies. Yeah, yeah. Like, you know, that it's not, it was never something that was always on, as opposed to numerous other Scorsese ones that you would just, you could be channel surfing and it would pop up.
It always appeared to be a lesser Scorsese.
And yet, it's like the one, it's like, this is the secret one. If you can tap into this, well, then you know you're getting that straight Scorsese right to the vein, you know? Like, this is the one. Cause, like, I was seeing a thing on Twitter recently where it was, you can only pick four Scorsese movies to keep, which ones you keep. And the amount of people I saw, like, were putting this in their four that they would keep.
Really?
And that's why I was excited to revisit it. It definitely wouldn't be in my...
Oh, so you have seen it?
I've seen it, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you said you had the tape,
Yes, my film, my Super 8. But it wouldn't be my top four, I'll tell you that now. No. Scorsese, no.
Wouldn't be mine either.
Andy?
Can...
I don't want you holding back. I know we I know
never
we have company,
do,
I know we have company here, but...
I never
please.
Do. Didn't like to be honest with you now. Not for me. This was a hard watch. The first half was kind of carried by the style almost, like where I'm kind of like, okay, you know, it's all
the
mad.
Momentum.
And then from about halfway on, it was just kind of became dull for me. They didn't have a lot there. And Terry, you made me understand why I like or dislike certain movies. It's the lack of the story.
No plot. You're a big plotsman.
And this is a thin plot for a plotsman like myself.
It's all vibe.
I didn't like it now at all. I could have happily gone with the rest of my life without seeing this movie and being fine with it.
Was there any...
Maybe coming in... I love movies set in New York from like... any time before like 95, you know, 90 back towards 80s, 70s and all that. So I love the whole backdrop of it. Cage was good in parts. I thought Ving Rhames was very good. I thought Tom Sizemore was very good. I thought Patricia Arquette was bad. I thought she was very bad.
They were married at this time. Patricia Arquette.
I'll tell their chemistry.
Nick Cage. They got divorced 2 years later.
Chemistry.
Well, I can see why.
I mean, I think the way Cage is being told to play it or whatever, like, it's hard for him to have any chemistry, I think, with anybody.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He's a zombie, essentially.
Yes.
You know? I kind of felt bad.
Can I ask, because I'd like to throw the floor to you guys and see what you guys thought of it. Did you have more redeeming qualities that you spotted than I did, or did any of us love it, or what?
Yeah, I think I agree with the propulsiveness of the first act. In fact, I checked the time on it when he kind of stopped his shift and was going home, and it was like sort of pre-dawn, not quite dawn, like pre-dawn, and it was like 34 minutes in. So like the first 34 minutes of it are all at night. It's all either in the ambulance or in the hospital. And, you know, establishing all these kind of characters, the guard in the hospital who's like don't make me take off my sunglasses.
Grizz, and Grizz.
Yeah,
it's fucking brilliant, I would say.
And I was like, it kind of felt like a weird, almost like a sort of a feature-length pilot episode for a sitcom that's just not very funny and is actually quite grim. But
you could
I did
actually
think,
see this as like a HBO
kind
of, like one of those dramedies that they were fond of doing. Like, you know, it's a drama, but we'll have dark humor in there.
Yeah.
That's the thing, I couldn't tell what, like, I was like, okay, is it like a, obviously it's drama and it's gritty, but like, is there a bit of comedy is it trying to be? Is it almost like a supernatural thing at some point?
Yeah,
at some point?
Yeah.
I had it in my head that it was like ghosts. And it's not really.
Yeah.
It's, you know, he's haunted by that one
just
girl.
Just one person.
Yeah.
You know.
I thought that was kind of overdone a little
very,
bit.
Very, very overdone.
It's like he can maybe see her.
Show me that face. Like,
he can see her once or twice, but then there's one shot where going down the street and like everyone is her. And I'm like, all right, we get it already. Right. He killed her.
Beating us over the head with
what's
this.
What's that Garth Marenghi? He's like, I know authors that use subtext and they're cowards.
It was very, very clunky. But I kept comparing it to, Andy, you don't have this problem because you haven't seen Taxi Driver, but I kept comparing it to Taxi Driver. And in my head I was going,
really?
Well, he wouldn't have cast De Niro in the lead role because everyone would have been, no, this is just Ambulance Driver. a sort of spiritual sequel. And there were elements of it, like the other ambulance drivers, the captain, where he goes in and he's talking to him, is like the dispatcher in Taxi Driver, and there's like other cab drivers who are kind of wacky. And I think the best parts of the movie for me were the John Goodman, Tom, I've got massive crazy fucking eyes, Sizemore, and Ving Rhames.
Ving Rhames is the one for me. Ving Rhames
was
the one
quality.
He's so good.
He could have put him driving a taxi in Taxi Driver and he would have been completely like believable. I just thought that scene where he's like, we're going to pray to the Lord after they give the junkie the adrenaline injection, and then he wakes up and he's like, hallelujah.
It's so good. But then I was like, what is he getting out of this? Like, what is he getting like about this?
The character.
He gives Nick Cage the character. Like, he gives Nick Cage the look and the case, like, gives him the nod. He's got the fucking knack or the narc call in or whatever. And then he's like, oh, you know, is he trying to convert these people? Or is he just having fun?
Mad?
Is he just having fun?
Is his religion just a kind of a hilarious front? Or does he truly truly believe in all this kind of
stuff? Because he is, you know, a womanizer, and he's like somebody who's like drink drive, and you know, he seems like he's stepping outside his comfort zone, which I really appreciate. Because it's very easy for Ving Rhames to be, fuck y'all,
super,
or it's going to be the day of the dog, you know, this kind of. And for him to be like this kind of like bombastic, bubbly kind of guy. I was like, oh, and like wearing a piece as well. Wearing a fucking toupee.
Yeah. It really changed his whole personality.
It changes everything about him. I thought there wasn't
enough John Goodman.
I would have liked more.
Yeah, John Goodman.
I was just getting into it with him, and then I was like, oh, where is he gone?
Yeah, he just kind of floated in and just disappeared again. He kind of had that weird. We falls asleep. He's like, oh, fuck this job. I'm going to set up my own thing and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
It just kind of established the, you know, the weird apathy that I guess some of these ambulance drivers will have.
Yeah.
It's just a
like,
job.
No, it does seem like the worst. They do make it seem like the worst job in the world. I just kind of thought it. I felt like the movie didn't quite know what it wanted to be, you know what I mean? Now, I don't know if I just
I think you're right there, because there's a lot of bits in it where I'm like what is this? It's interesting, or you know, it's kind of like, oh, that's kind of cool, but like, what do we?
I just
kind of
left myself thinking,
like, is
what's the point?
Like,
yeah,
it's the span of a weekend, but it's like, it's not a sum of its parts. You know
what
I mean?
Like, what's it building to? What's it?
There is no.
What's the end game of these characters and stuff? I mean, I think he just has this. I like the idea of an ambulance driver whose patients keep dying.
That's what I thought was great, that he hasn't saved anybody in 6 months or whatever. Very good. There's some very good ideas in it.
But that notion of it came in a bit too late into the movie. Like, you know, I think...
Yeah, it's kind of like, I'm a grief mop.
That was a great line. That could have been at the beginning, like him, you know, I've been working this job, whatever. But the voiceover comes in straight away. But it was kind of jarring. It didn't really set the scene. And then to have him, you know, oh, okay, he can't sleep and everyone's dying. And then he's haunted by this one thing that happened. And then you find out later on, you know, what he did, where he's like fucking up, putting the breathing tube into her stomach instead of her lungs.
But like, okay, like that happened. But like, surely, and this is me being very cynical, but like, surely other stuff like that, like that's part of what happens in, you know, emergency medicine. Surely that can't be the only time that something like that has ever happened to him.
Exactly.
Like, why is this such a like crushing weight on him? Like, you know,
he seemed to shrug off that dead baby pretty quick.
Yeah, I mean, like...
he wasn't seeing, like, a baby's face in every single person.
You know, it was... that I didn't understand. That, like, I thought it was going to be that, like, you know... I thought it was going to be, like, something... like, he was drunk and he couldn't do it. Or, something like that. Like,
not like he tried and just...
And, it wasn't, even when that scene is happening, like, Goodman's like, no, you're in the stomach again, let me try. And is it like, he's like, no, give me one more time. Is it that, oh, like his hubris of like, no, I know I can do it. And that's what caused her life. Yeah. Fair enough. But like, he doesn't even say that. He doesn't even have that like scene where he like confesses to Patricia Arquette, say, and is like, oh, I was so stubborn. I thought I could do it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, something like that.
Can I ask you though, like, do you think, or do either of you think that it would have been a better movie with a different casting for, like, instead of Nick Cage, someone else, and instead of Patricia Arquette, someone else? Or would it have been bad, I think
Patricia Arquette, she does seem like she's sleepwalking a little bit.
Doesn't want to be
the
there or something.
It's almost as if she's someone's feeding her lines just before she says it or something.
It's that Godfather trick where it's written on Nick Cage's shirt, like,
because you know, you think of her in stuff like True Romance,
like,
or in stuff like
Boyhood. Like, she won the Oscar. She won the Oscar for Boyhood.
She's
like,
very good now.
She won the Oscar. So she is good.
And she's cool romance, and sexy with her funny teeth that I really enjoy. I really love her teeth.
I love that it's.
She just looks like a regular person.
That's it. She didn't get them fixed. You know what I mean? Like, and like, she's brilliant. Actually, I don't know. Like, Catwell, you probably haven't watched it yet. Like, Severance.
Oh no, I haven't seen that. Yeah,
she's in it, and she's I didn't know she was talking about being checked in. Like, she's brilliant in it. Like, she's playing this like very odd, strange character. Like, who's like the boss in it?
Yeah.
But you're like, wow, you know, she is laser focused, and you're right. And this is just kind of like, my dad, you know,
she's like, I used to be an addict and now I'm not an addict, but I just have a lot of stresses. And I'm just like, there's no real emotion to her. She's in an emotional situation, but she doesn't seem to be expressing much.
The sun's coming up.
Speaking of that, though, like the whole like Nicolas Cage, I don't know if it's like Martin Scorsese was like big enough director to sort of put the reins on him or something like that, but I kind of feel like
you wanted more Gonzo-ness. Like,
he kind of, well, he definitely stopped him from going over the top, which he could. He has a tendency to do.
I think the character is written as that, though. He is low energy for the most part.
So why get Nicolas Cage?
Because he can do that, and then he does go, he does spike at times in it. Like when he spikes,
like, they're saying, kill Marcus, okay? You know, like when he's talking about the ghosts and all. Like,
he's like, that ain't funny, man. That ain't funny, Frank.
Yeah. Like that, like that was like, oh, there he
when
is.
When he's with Tom Sizemore, there are. I think that's what they're going for. They're going for the guy who is like beat down, so fucking burnt out by this thing. Like that, I love that scene where it's your man Carlo from The Sopranos, the boss, and he's like, I'll fire you tomorrow. He's like, no, you promised me you were gonna fire me today.
I like that.
That's like. Good Cage. You're getting good Cage there. I
don't know if he's wasted or not, but sorry.
I think he's good.
I think he's fine.
I don't think this movie needs him. You know what I mean? Like we were talking about The Rock before, and I know that we don't all agree on it, but like with Face Off, yes, you need Cage. And with you know, a few of the other ones, you need him. I don't feel like I needed Nicolas Cage.
I think you needed him in Snake Eyes. I think you needed him in Snake Eyes.
Snake Eyes,
to play that character. Definitely needed him in Face Off. Until you can provide me with somebody, a suitable replacement for The Rock, who's going to be playing Stanley Goodspeed. You got to do your research before you can. Yeah,
Goodspeed. You know, I think you're right though. I think there is a sort of a. I could see pretty much anyone playing the character in this movie.
As Frank?
Yes, Frank, just as well. But yeah, for something like, something like Snake Eyes, something like...
He's full, it's basically Nick Cage on Terry Wogan for the first 50 minutes of that movie. Until the conspiracy is unraveled, he might as well be, you know, throwing the money out to the crowd or whatever. Like.
But there's a weird energy he brings to his Stanley Goodspeed in The Rock character. I don't know who...
I just felt like that character didn't need to be weird.
Hey, I love the Beatles, like, okay?
I'm a super freak.
You know, the whole just, you know... I don't know. I just thought with that...
Coming
some friggin'
slack, Andy.
Cut the chit-chat, a-hole. You know, like, you're getting... Yeah, but I guess you're getting Cage there, but with this...
He has so many different sides to him. This is his serious.
I'm working with Marty Scorsese in a serious picture, and I'm a serious actor.
It's funny because we kind of talked about it last week with Snake Eyes, where it's like it's the post action, like his big year of like '97.
Yeah,
you know, it's his post action blockbuster move, and it's like he works with De Palma in this thing that could easily be confused. I know when we were kids, when we went to rent it, it was like, this is another Face Off. It's Snake Eyes.
Yeah.
And it's not that at all. And now he's sort of moving towards, I'm going to work with all these auteurs, you know. I worked with De Palma. Okay. Scorsese is here. Coming up. He has like Ridley Scott coming up. He seems to be a big enough star that he can like pick and choose who he wants to work with, or like he at least gets in the room with these guys and they can be
can I ask you both, I don't know how familiar you are with Cage's
bizarre personal life
with Cage's work, Ed, but like has he peaked at this stage or no in both of your opinions?
I think the way his career goes, he sort of peaks and troughs and peaks and troughs
big time,
and like whenever you can never really write him off. I think
that's the thing,
right?
Like at this point, so this is 99, and then like he has
this is a valley,
but it's not even, it's like we've just come over the crest, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like he still has hits that are like okay, and this one is not a hit. 8mm is not a hit. He's trying, like, and that's, I think he's working with Joel Schumacher there.
Yeah.
He's trying these different things. Like Captain Corelli's Mandolin, you're on the slide down. Yeah. Like, he has a few, like, Gone in 60 Seconds is a hit, but it's not well reviewed. And then it kind of like, 2002 is adaptation. And then all of a sudden, you're back on the upswing. He's nominated for an Oscar for that. He works at Ridley Scott. He works with Gore Verbinski, like these kind of hot directors of the mid 2000s. And all of a sudden, you're back up, and then you're kind of back down. And then like he has National Treasure. Those two movies are like two of his biggest hits, surprise hits. They kind of bring.
Are we covering that in the series?
I didn't put it on, but I'm kind of regretting.
I haven't seen National Treasure, but
It's fun.
Terry, yeah.
There's no reason why we can't.
Fucking yes. All right, great.
Get one out.
It's Benjamin, probably.
No,
it's
no,
more,
I don't mean
it's more fun than
Benjamin
this
Franklin. Benjamin Franklin Gates. We're on it.
That's his character's
okay
name.
Yeah, because he's like, because he is, I think he is
trying to find the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, that's it. Like he's, I think, and I think Ed Harris is in one of them. So you know,
oh,
unbelievable. Mm. But now I want to emphasize: we're not adding a movie. You're going to replace it with something, right?
No, we have to, because everything that's left is
no,
is essential. It's essential. Everything.
No,
let's
forget
just
it.
Let's
forget
do
I
that movie
anything
instead of this one. We'll
yeah,
we'll watch it. We'll stop recording.
We'll take a
we'll
break.
Watch it. We'll come back in 2 hours.
Do you think they really shot
get
this?
Rid of, we can we'll get
just
rid
do
of
watch
one of those weird ones.
We'll just do watch along. Do you think he really shot this on Mount Rushmore?
I don't know.
Have you guys ever done a watch along? You should do a watch along. I'd enjoy that.
We've done it on the Patreon for. We did it for Avengers Endgame, and we did it for Die Hard. We kind of do one at Christmas time, normally, and
yeah,
I think it's very fun. But a lot of the time, I just find myself watching the movie too much.
Yeah,
there'll be big
yeah
gaps
yeah
of like
huge 10 minute silence.
And it's like, and that's fucking deadly there. Look, there he is. There, there's Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
And you're like,
just every 5 minutes going, fucking yes.
Yeah.
Like, what is it? What is it?
he just
so
won't die.
Yeah.
It's just very difficult
really
to kill
to
that
die
man.
It's very, very hard. Yeah, I think, like, there's certainly, we talked about, like, not building to anything. There's a through line in this movie of Patricia Arquette's dad.
Mm.
And the idea,
whatever
the idea,
that's what I
yeah
said. Whatever. That was my thought on that plot line. Oh, is he still
there's
around?
Something
still
there,
that,
like the,
they're reaching for
the
that
idea of like that his life being tied to like Cage's
sanity.
Yeah, and his you know ability to rest, and when he's gone, I actually thought the scene where how he kills him essentially,
yeah,
he euthanizes him, was fucking dead, because I was like, how are they gonna do this that
yeah
doesn't show up that like he's fucking smothered him and there's a spike, and it's like, oh no, very clever, he just takes it
yeah
off and puts
yeah
it all on him, lets your man die naturally, and then puts it back on, and it's fucking Carla
and we,
from
and
Scrubs,
and we all know how to do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I think my favorite
you learn something,
I think one of my favorite scenes
yeah
I think one of my favorite scenes was him in the apartment.
Cliff Curtis.
Yeah, he was great.
Cliff is great.
I was really digging that scene. I don't know why. Like, I just that one for me was like, hey, okay, now.
I wish it had gone
cooking
a bit farther. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because like, he takes the pill, and you're like, okay, now we're gonna get like drug trip,
yeah,
and it's like, he just starts like freaking out. It's like, oh, it's over. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, he picks your one up and like,
grin.
Like he becomes the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah,
like, picks her up
yeah
on the shoulder. Like,
I
like, let him go.
Seems like he's in good shape for this.
Yeah, he's pretty jacked, isn't he? Like,
yeah.
You know?
I thought that was going to get a little bit more kind of wild.
Yeah,
but it doesn't.
He got out too quickly.
Yeah,
like, yeah.
It's just that scene where he's pulling the ghosts out of the ground. Which was kind
didn't,
of a did, bit.
Didn't
much
care for it.
There was a couple of times where I was going, that's a bit much. The other time
yeah
was when the Patricia Arquette's dad, who's, you know, in a coma.
Talking to him.
And they keep shocking him. Talking to him.
Don't do it, Frank.
Like, that's a bit much. So to get over accidentally
to
killing someone, he intentionally killed someone.
Yeah,
is the moral of the story.
You'd be seeing him in everyone's face for the next 10 years.
Yeah, that's
I need
how you
a
do
new
it
face to look at.
I actually thought that you guys were both kind of like this one. I don't know why, but I kind of thought, well, obviously I'm missing something.
I think, like, I don't think this is a terrible film by any stretch of the imagination,
no,
but I had higher hopes for it. I think
yeah
it'll
yeah
be bottom of my list, like, of ones we've watched so far. Just because if you think about it, it's like, you know, on paper, you're like, oh, you know, Nick Cage, Scorsese, Paul Schrader, like this.
Yeah, like when you
this
told
cosmic
me
Robert Richardson shot it, you know, got his sort of signature overexposed
yeah
big light from above alien style abduction yeah. shots.
There's a lot of that.
But some of that looks fucking great. Like, I have to say, yeah. like, or like when the camera is like flipping on its side, and yeah. it does, like yeah. you say, it yeah. does look like bits out of a horror movie or something. The bits that like didn't work for me, and it's kind of like he uses the technique again in Wolf of Wall Street, is like the music blending in to one another.
Yeah,
you know, it's
yeah.
it's that Van Morrison song that keeps playing, and then it's like something else comes over it and then drowns it out, and I'm like, okay. Or like the camera move, you know, they're at like 2x speed when they're like going crazy, like him and Tom Sizemore.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
and like even the I get the idea of like, okay, this is like a vignette-y type of movie. You have yeah. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and like Saturday, like what's the motivation for like, let's go fuck shit up, it's a full moon, like, and like, remember what we used to do, Frank, huh? And you're like, yeah. okay, but like, you know, kind of, is the whole thing that like Tom Sizemore just like roaming the streets, beating the shit out of the people, and then bringing them to the hospital? Like, is that it? Like, I'm not really sure. Is that it? Like, or
I gotta make myself work.
That's
this
it.
Is
like,
work
it's like,
for me.
Are you getting commission for? you getting commission for bringing these people to the hospital? Like, that's never really.
I thought that the ambulance flipping thing
with Ving Rhames, I thought that was
looked great.
Yeah, that was the best.
Again, like the whole sort of camera when he's getting out and he's laughing and the camera sort of tilting with him as he's getting up.
That was the best part of the movie. That was the best chunk. The Friday night was my favorite part.
Yeah,
I have to say, just when it was coming up to the end of that, like. After the crash, I was actually like falling asleep watching this on Saturday, being out in the sun all day Saturday. And Saturday night, I was watching it. I was like, I have to like pause this. I'm going to come back to it tomorrow. And I was flicking around on my TV, on my Sky Movies channels. And the end of The Truman Show was on with Ed Harris being like, hit him again with the waves.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah.
Paul Giamatti being like, okay, accessing weather, you're gonna kill him, and that woke me right up.
Yeah,
that's the thing. I fell asleep during this well, and I also had to come back to it the next night. And it was like, and the worst thing is because like I was making Kerry watch it beside me, who has to watch these movies with me.
You shouldn't have to. You can watch them on your own.
When do I get the time? When do I get the time to watch them on
you
my
make
own?
The time. Secret time downstairs at like
you
10
sleep even
at night.
Less. That's the that's what I do. You suffer.
Sleep is the priority.
You suffer to enjoy
like she's
things.
Watching it.
Yes.
She's watching it and I'm in bed and I'm like this. And just like one snore and she's like, was that a snore? I was like, no,
you must have farted, dear.
Yeah. Like, it must have been the baby. I was like, oh, no. Enjoying this movie. You know, like, and then, so we had to go back to it the next night. I watched a bit of it in work.
It's funny because my partner fell asleep watching it. Not with me. She'd seen it before, but I was like, is it any good? She said, I don't know. I fell asleep. So
common thread here.
I mean,
now, I didn't fall asleep. I watched a half an hour of it. I had to pause it, and then later on that evening I watched the rest of it. But at one point I was like, I had that feeling in the back of my head of like, where is this going and how is this going to end? But also I was
like
thinking that because I was like, I want it to end.
Yes,
like you're putting it back on like this fucking movie.
I knew this, I had the feeling fucking it was going to end with him going to sleep properly. Like, you know what I mean? Like him getting a proper night's sleep. Because like he sleeps 2 hours every so often or whatever in the movie. But like the idea of him actually getting his good night's sleep, I was like, that's how it's going to end.
It's interesting because like I was going to say, because we were... Peter McGann, who was on last week, was possibly going to be joining us tonight, and this is one of his like favorites, and I would be very interested to hear why. You know,
I want
to
know
like, what am I missing? I just want to know why.
Get him on for a Patreon only bonus episode.
Yeah.
Get him to do like a 10 minute pitch.
Why?
Well, see, I think it does have a lot of good stuff in it. It is obviously. Fucking directed by someone who knows how to direct movies and edited by someone who knows how to edit. Although there were a couple of janky edits in it.
I noticed that as well.
there's a bit in it where, and I actually rewound it, went, go back 10 seconds, enhance. My whole tech team there with me. And
you had Seth Green and you had Jack Black and the lads. Yeah. Like,
and
Jamie Kennedy.
Gene Hackman angrily shouting at me on a rooftop.
But we gotta blow up the building because you answered a phone call.
But like, yeah, like she's looking at him. He's staring at her directly, with his head turned, and then it cuts back to her looking at him, and you see his head in the foreground blurred, but it's turned completely the other way. And then the next edit, they're suddenly side by side walking towards the hospital, and I was like, wait, what the fuck? And in my head, I thought, is this supposed to represent his sleeplessness,
madness,
he's
losing time,
he's getting, things are getting jerky, he's blacking out for tenths of a second or two frames here and there, but no, I think it's just weird bad edits.
You know what, it feels like it's said, you know, that Scorsese didn't enjoy making the movie, and I think you can feel that. It feels like his heart isn't in it, like, you know what I mean? That's the thing.
Feels like he's just getting through it.
Like, there's bad edits in Goodfellas that are there if you want to notice them, but the movie's just so good, you don't.
It's so propulsive.
Until they're pointed out. Yeah. So I think I was noticing these things because I was looking for them because I was maybe bored slightly.
When somebody points them out to you in Goodfellas, you're like, fuck off, will you? Like, just let me enjoy the movie. It's a work of art.
Talking to me about fucking edits.
Yeah. De Niro never actually killed someone, you know.
See those stamps, they're actually not landing on Frank Vincent's face.
Speaking of that took me out of the recently deceased James Caan in The Godfather, when he's in that street fight scene, that one punch.
Why did somebody point that out?
Fickle old me was like, no, the whole scene doesn't work for me now. And like, it's like there's so many moving parts. Like, I'm just like, munching on my popcorn. Like, no.
Just
no.
Throw
like,
it down.
The amount of effort that's gone into it. But just
pouring petrol
thing,
on your popcorn, lighting on fire. No.
Like, no one would be like, go back there. It's a very clear air shot that you got there, Jimmy.
It's been a rough couple of weeks with, you know, like, Polly Walnuts is gone.
Yeah, Gangster Boys dropping like flies.
Yeah.
And then who was Ray Liotta as well before that? Like, you know.
The youngest
rough
of them.
I think when, and I'm sorry, I'm going to drop his name again. And it's a good segue, actually, because we'll get into a new segment that we were talking about last week. We're going to ask who the Ed Harris of this movie is. I think we should come up with the Ed Harris Award for excellence in acting.
So when you say the Ed Harris, this is a very niche Ed. I'm just going to fill you in on this because we loved him in The Rock.
Oh yeah,
one of the best performances ever.
So committed. So
yeah.
He's just a great villain.
But he's not a villain. Layers. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, he's like launch the missiles. He's like, are you fucking crazy? I'm not going to launch those missiles. You're like, we bluffed, they called, okay? It's over.
Yeah, it's over. Like, yeah. But, like, there's a thing we put out on our Twitter today, on the social media, of, like, Ed Harris bloopers from The Rock, and, like, Jesus, talk about intense. Yeah, yeah.
In the light, sir.
like, it's like, over here, sir. Yeah. Like, and then, you know, like, he just keeps, like, messing up, and I'm like, fuck, just banging the phone. And then, like, eventually he's like, what are you doing? You know, to someone else.
And there's a bit where he laughs. And he's like, could you not put that bit on it there at the end? Yeah. Okay, let's go.
Give it to me straight. Okay, so we're asking who is the Ed Harris? Or who's the best performance?
Yeah, the best acting in this movie.
I was surprised when I saw in the opening credits, because I knew John Goodman was in it, but I didn't know Ving Rhames was in it or Tom Sizemore. I mean, Patricia Arquette is the anti-Ed Harris, but I think Mark Anthony surprised me because I hadn't seen him in anything really that I could
Man
think
on
of.
Fire?
Who was Mark Anthony?
Mark Anthony was Noel. Did not care for that name, by the way. Did not care.
Because I was like, is he called Noel? It's like his name would be called fucking Brendan, for fuck's sake.
Keith.
Felix.
Porrick. Porrick, come here. Felix, are you back in here? Are you back in here again, Porrick? Jesus.
Not you again, Graham.
Yeah, Graham. Like.
I thought he was suitably intense and believable.
Yeah, he's a believable. Bit too much for me now, I have to say. I was like...
I thought he suited the movie, to be honest. I thought I was kind of like...
The fact that he kept
didn't recognize
showing
him.
Up, the fact that it was just this one guy throughout all of New York, he just keeps
New York's
appearing.
A small place.
Like, yeah, I guess so. Like, I guess. Only 100 people in New York.
Well, look, can we put a bow on this unless you guys have
I think
else?
Ving Rhames gets the Ed Harris Award.
I think Ving Rhames.
For excellence in acting, this episode. I just thought he was so fucking good. Like, even the whole thing with the operator. And he's like, let her wait, let her wait. And he's like, oh, baby. You know, just thoroughly entertaining.
Yeah, he was a shining light.
And there was even that, like, you know, he'd be like joking and then something would happen. He'd narrow his eyes and he's like, no, don't start with that shit. Like, you know, straight away you'd get like serious and you're like, oh, okay. Like, you know.
Yeah. He's giving you something.
I don't know. Yeah, shining light is a good way.
Yeah,
just put a smile on my face.
Grim movie.
Tom Sizemore was just like, oh, this.
Tom Sizemore is just Tom Sizemore. Like,
yeah, I was like, oh god.
See,
he's bringing it down even more.
Yeah, like I'm not that familiar with Tom Sizemore. I only know him from Always Sunny,
the trucker guy.
Like, I will not suck you, and I will not be sucked on. Bye. You know? Like this, I'm just thinking, and he basically plays the same character, like just a straight version.
You've seen him and stuff. Like we watched Point Break all those years ago. He's in Point Break. Like his big one is Heat, which I don't think you've seen, Andy.
No,
and like he's great in it. That's his best performance. That's his best performance. Everything else, you kind of feel like he's playing Tom Sizemore, who's just he's taking his meds today. By meds, I mean drugs. And he's gone on set. Okay.
Eyes.
Natural Born Killer is the ultimate Tom Sizemore performance, I think. But he just has this manic...
You know what? He's
He could have been a Joker. He's got an anarchy to him.
I have enough... I can see that. I have enough with the fucking Joker.
You love the Joker IP, Terry.
Shut up, that fuck. I can't believe they're making, a sequel to that fucking movie. Yeah. I mean, I can't believe
Joaquin
it.
Joaquin Phoenix in it? They're all gonna love
Lady
it
Gaga
well.
Is apparently Harley Quinn, and it's gonna be a musical.
Oh, brilliant! You'll love it, Terry.
They should just have every single actor who could potentially play the Joker be in a Joker movie, and they all just kind of, you know, like Battle Royale, but instead of Japanese school children, it's Jokers killing each other. Last one left is the craziest Joker.
That I was
and Batman is just sitting above the like the pit,
eating popcorn.
Look out, chum.
I love this.
Look out, chum. Vintage Joker is going to... it's the Adam West era Batman as well. Like,
is Tom Sizemore still alive?
Or
is he dead?
Googling.
Because immediately I go, he seems like the sort of guy who'd be dead.
I was just thinking, he's got dead guy energy. Yeah.
BDGE.
Tom Sizemore is an American.
Big dead guy energy.
it's an American. You know what I mean? he's alive. He's 60.
He's
only 60. Okay.
Like, God bless him, he had his troubles. My wife was watching, as I was doing my notes, she was watching the opening to Saving Private Ryan. And I was like, oh yeah. He's fucking, like, he is, like, normal enough in that movie.
Yeah.
But I think he knew he'd have to be on his best behavior if he's working with Spielberg.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like he's known for that whole.
Supporting roles in films such as, doesn't list this one. So that tells you all you need to know.
Yeah. Okay.
Can we give it a rating?
Sure. Ed, do you want to go first?
Out of 10?
Ooh. I would give it a solid 6 because it's good. It's got these flourishes that make you go, oh yeah, this is a Scorsese movie. It's got, you know, the holy trinity of ambulance drivers that he goes around with. It's got this in the arms of Mary, religious, I almost laughed. All right, Marty, I get it. That final shot of the movie is like clang. You dropped your metaphor.
But it's the two most like religious mainstream auteurs. Like Schrader is like
absolutely
fucking Italian Catholic. So is Marty. Like, you know, it's like we're fucking
trying to be priest.
Okay. They didn't, I mean, they didn't like our Jesus movie. Well, how about a New York Jesus movie?
I would be
hey, inclined. I'm walking on water here.
Dustin Hoffman can't do it, huh? What about Nick Cage? He looks like Jesus in Con Air, huh?
Yeah, he does. Fuck Jesus,
yeah.
I would be inclined to give it a 6 as well.
I'm going to say 6 as well.
Hey, 666.
Hey, now we're talking
read into there.
Yeah. Now we're talking religion.
Where the devil in hell the whole time.
That would also in a lesser filmmaker's hands, that would have been the, you know.
Yeah.
There's like, and it turns out New York is hell.
Yeah.
The end. The end, you know.
Yeah. Question mark.
And like the camera floats up at the end and it's like, oh wait, it's below the earth the whole time.
Yeah.
I tell you, the movie would
Sympathy
have been
for the Devil starts playing.
Ow.
And everyone's like, oh, that's such a Scorsese move.
Different version of Nick Cage just walking along the sidewalk. Like, please let me eat it. Oh, we got a movie here, folks, I think.
We do. A remake of Bringing Up the Dead. Actually, there was one moment where the music took me completely out of it, because What's the Frequency, Kenneth?
Yeah.
Started playing. And I don't think I've ever heard Scorsese use
REM
any music from past 1979. You know, it's all classic rock. And I was
Rolling Stones, get out of here.
Yeah. It was your man, Mark Anthony's character, Noel, like on the street. And it was like, oh, I get it. What's the frequency, Kenneth? Because he's crazy. He's on a different frequency. This is shit. Is what I thought. I was like, this is too much.
Very heavy-handed.
Embarrassing, like, Marty.
All right.
This is embarrassing.
It's like, so Marty, what brush do you want to paint with? And he's like, give me the power hose. This is how you do it. This is how we get out of here, okay? We're going home.
I'll show these people something about taste.
Oh, wow.
This is an old Premier magazine from February 1996 that I bought and still have.
Featuring Marty.
For some reason, it's a casino. Yeah. It's Casino Diaries.
95 was Casino. December 95.
I want to give it to Peter McGann because he loves Casino so much and Scorsese so much. I don't know if you'd, I was like, here's an old magazine, I don't know if you'd enjoy it.
Because
I said this to him before, it's like, yeah, I have this gift for you. And I'm like, every time I mention him, I was like, oh fuck, I forgot, because I go somewhere where he'd be there. I've built it up too much, and now I'm trying to build it down. I'm trying to build it back down and go, it's actually like, shit. You're not going to enjoy it. It's terrible. You're going to be insulted, in fact. It's so bad.
I used to keep all my Empires and Total Film mags, but it was I moved from my mom's house into like a house with like four of my mates in Baldoyle, but I brought like boxes, like cardboard boxes. I worked in a center at the time, so literally be getting all the cardboard, and like I boxed up all my magazines and brought them with me, and then brought half of them back to my mom's house. Then when I moved to Australia, I was like, yeah, just get rid of them. But like, that's how I was like, why am I bringing these with me? Lugging them across the sea from like.
I might need them now.
The thing is, and how fucking sad, because I was doing my Wire, my first watch of the Wire at the time, and I remember reading an article, and I couldn't remember if it was Total Film or Empire, and it was like the top 5 Wire moments, and I was trying to like find it, and like fucking Gene Hackman at the end of the conversation, just. Empire magazine spread all over the floor, and me like looking through, and me like, it's not that one. Okay, where is it? Like, Gary, you okay up there? I'm busy.
And fucking Omar is in Bringing Out the Dead, and he gets shot and killed.
Oh yeah,
I was like, Omar. I couldn't remember his actual name because he's Michael another guy that's passed
away. He died. Yeah, he died recently.
But he gets shot and he's got one short scene. And I was like, fucking Omar. I said, that's ironic. And then he dies.
He never got his due in feature films. Omar, like Michael Kenneth Williams. He never got, he was always like, you know, the master of TV, of HBO dramas. Yeah. But like he never... You know, translated over. Well,
some would say they're the new movies. Now, movies are second fiddle to those sort of shows.
You might say those TV shows are 10-hour movies.
Huh?
Don't you fucking dare say that. I hate it so much.
Actually,
one long 10-hour movie.
And you don't get the same level of depth that you'd get in a 2-hour movie, you see, because now you can span it out on real character development.
Guy comes in, the main character buys a lunchbox off a Tupperware salesman. And then the whole next episode follows that salesman. And you can really get an insight into his life. And, you know, it's great. You wouldn't get that in the movie. Yeah, because it would be cut out.
They realize this goes nowhere.
All right. I'm going to get our plugs in here, Terry.
Please.
And Ed. You can find us on Instagram at What's So Great About Pod and on Twitter at WSGApod. You'll find links to everything we do, including latest episodes, video stuff, and the Patreon.
Oh, the Patreon. Thank you, Andy. Over on behind the paywall, we got two tiers. We got the Hungry Hearts tier. That's literally pay what you want tier. You can pay low, low fee of €1, I think, is the lowest.
If you do, how do you sleep at night?
Would you get 4 episodes per month on that. You get access to all our back catalogues, our What's So Great About the MCU, What's So Great About 90s Action Movies, What's So Great About Ryan Gosling, What's So Great About Big Willie's Flops, aka Will Smith's Bad Movies, and you get access to a bunch of other ones. We do top fives. We do a couple of like freewheeling, just having the chat. We've made bespoke playlists for each other. You know, there's lots of good stuff there. Pitch meetings. We pitch each other our own hypothetical screenplays. There's loads of good stuff there. And the second tier that we have, it's our big shot tier. It's a $5 backer. You get everything I just mentioned there. Plus you get a bonus Q&A and you get access to all our video recordings once Ed signs on the dotted line for his release here, of course.
Never. I'll flash my genitals just so you'll never release it.
Blur his face, Andy. And you get also, we're doing our Put It in H, back doing a Simpsons episode every 4 weeks or so, from season 3, you know, back what buttered our bread originally. But if you can't afford to support us on the Patreon, well, you can do me
fuck you.
Thank you, Ed. You can 100%. Do me a solid. You can support me in another way. Now, Andy,
yes,
did you know that in this movie Nick Cage's character hadn't, I don't want to say saved, he hadn't saved a patient in 6 months. Now, I don't want a 6-star review. I'm not greedy. This isn't Just Eat. But I tell you what, I'll take a 5-star review from all he is listening out there. Every single one he is. Give me a 5-star review. We need it.
And I'll go ahead and say thank you to those who've already done it. You can ignore that message. But to the rest of you, what's taking you so long, huh?
You could also, you know what you could do? You could do some of our marketing for us. You can tag a friend, tell a friend, you know, just say, oh, What's So Great About Podcasts? It's so, so funny. These guys are great. Stick it on your social media, whatever, you know?
And once a week, do that on all your social media platforms and we'll say no more about it.
Yeah, perfect. It's a free podcast you're getting here, folks. Free.
All right. Dial it back now.
Okay, sorry. A big thank you to our guest, Ed Salmon. Ed, have you
thanks for having me back, guys.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for coming
back. Thank you. I have,
no, thank you.
I have a social media presence.
Oh.
I'm on TikTok as a 23-year-old girl called Laura, who dances while telling people about various genocides and political shenanigans that are happening in the world. On Twitter,
it just inspired me to get on TikTok.
There you go, get on it, follow me. No, I'm on TikTok as myself. I'm on Twitter, but I'm really on Instagram I have a couple of podcasts. I have a podcast, an old podcast called Reviewables, which may be coming back soon.
Hey!
In a couple of months. I have a podcast that I do with two of my friends called the Cine Stream Club, where we watch movies and put them in various categories. And we have
what kind of categories?
Oh, we have like back alley Oscars. We have what role could Tom Hanks play in this movie? There's a special section where Trevor Brown, the host, talks about watches. If anyone's wearing a nice watch
in the movie,
and he goes through what kind of watch it is, whether it's a good watch.
Nice.
Very niche.
I gotta say, on two levels, is the movie a good watch or is the watch a good watch?
There you go.
He can have that. Trevor, if you're listening, you can have that.
He'll really appreciate that. And I have my own podcast, Edwin Salmon of Knowledge, which has been on hiatus but is coming back in the next 2 weeks. But you will be able to hear it sooner than that on my Patreon.
Hold it.
For
you're taking money out of my mouth here, Ed. Promote your Patreon.
Don't listen to it.
For the low, low price of €250 a month. No, for a fiver a month, you can get, hey, there's like 2 years worth of extra episodes. And I do put little clips of stand up on TikTok and on Instagram Reels. I put the full shows up on my Patreon.
Oh, class.
If you want. And I'm writing a book, and most of that first draft of the first half of that book is up there. And there's lots of just nerdy stuff I put up that I don't put out to the general public. Like I talk about Radiohead and how much I love Radiohead and stuff like that that most people don't want to listen to.
You're really putting our Patreon to shame here, to be honest.
There you go. And I do stand-up comedy live out and about in Dublin.
Hardest working man. So, literally, you see him every other night of the week. He's performing somewhere.
Come catch me live and throw money at me.
You have a hat? Like,
I have a mouth. I have a big gaping
mouth. It needs to be like fed.
Like a hungry pelican. that's what they call me. They call me the pelican.
And we're going to see the pelican tonight. If you ever open up your own comedy club, you call it the Pelican.
Yeah.
Live at the Pelican.
Well, look, on that bombshell, shall we wrap things up?
Yeah. We'll be back next week.
What's next?
Adaptation.
Great. Ooh.
Yay. I can't wait.
You haven't seen that one?
I think, you know what? I actually saw it when I was like 15. And I do actually remember liking it, but.
Yeah,
I don't remember it being an easy watch. I'll say that.
I will tell you now, it is a considerably easier watch than this.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say so. I like that movie.
Okay.
I'm very excited to.
I actually haven't seen that in the world. I'll watch it again, and I'll listen to the podcast.
Hey, there you go. Ed listens. So why aren't you? I mean, you are listening. But, you
yeah, they're listening right now. All right. Well, look.
Two Nick Cages in that movie. How about that?
Yeah.
Two for the price of one.
We'll see you next week.
Andy's going to bring that enthusiasm to the podcast next week. What's your frequency, can at the shop? Been so drained.